Welcome to Land Academy. This is the Cash Flow from Land Show, where we show you how to buy unwanted vacant land and sell it for more on the internet. I'm Steve Butella.
I'm Jill DeWitt.
We are your hosts. With over 15,000 completed transactions, we are the experts in this niche land flipping business.
We hold a drawing to win a free property every month. Enter to win by reviewing this show on iTunes and downloading our free ebook at landacademy.com. All right, let's get this show started.
Steve Butella here with Land Academy. Before we get started with our interview with Luke Smith, which was recorded about a month and a half ago, I have to share with you that he has been incredibly successful at purchasing and selling real estate. So please keep that in mind while you're listening. And if you need more details than that, join us at successplant.com, which is our online membership community. Thanks. Luke Smith retired from being a penny stockbroker at 33 and is now a full-time dad of two toddlers from Encinitas, California. He heard about Land Academy on biggerpockets.com. He has not completed a purchase from his mailers yet, but he got a huge response, and he's using that to learn from, and he's sending out higher targeted mailers. Boy, it sounds like, Luke, that we're catching you right before massive success.
I hope so.
So tell us you sent the mailer out. Give us a little bit of some of the details and some of the types of calls that you got back and the response that you got.
Sure, I'd love to. So I was too cheap to pay for your program at first. I thought I'd give it a try with all the free information. And just reading between the lines, I thought I'd give it a try. So I fired off a couple hundred mailers, and people started calling. And
awesome.
I think where I was off base was I was going off the appraised values and doing a smaller piece of the appraised values. I was thinking I should sell these properties for a couple thousand bucks or more. So I would go for a couple thousand dollars or more appraised values. And the people that are calling back think their properties are worth, you know, 50 grand or 100 grand. I'm offering like $400 or a couple hundred dollars. And but I was amazed at how many actually called back.
Yeah.
They read their mail. They stewed on this thing. You know, they got pissed off at my lowball offer. They really value their land. And they called me back and they wanted to chew me out or haggle on price. Or, you know, to me, that's success. Like, my numbers were wrong. I can fix that in the next, you know, the next ones. Mm-hmm. But those are potential buyers of land. Those are people who buy vacant land in the middle of nowhere that I was making offers on.
Mm-hmm.
And they have astronomical numbers that they value that land at.
Well, you're exactly right. They are, you know, on your buyer list now, I hope.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great.
You know.
All right, so I'm going to ask you a few questions.
I have to interject one thing, though.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead. I was going to say, when you have these people, though, I feel like a broken record, but $10,000, you know, they think it's worth $10,000 3-6 months from now, your $500 offer is not so bad. You know, they sometimes do overvalue. It's a priceless asset to them, and I get it. It was handed down to the family, whatever. But then they realize, gosh, nobody really does want this, and this guy's willing to give me something, you know. And then they do a little homework, and they realize, you know, you're not that far off.
Yeah.
So it can happen still. So it's good.
Did you, Luke, the offers that you sent out, did you send an offer out that was modeled after the ones that we always send out? Was it an actual offer?
It was an actual offer, a two-page offer with a dollar amount in there. And I put a reply envelope, and you know, I was amazed how many people sent back notes and comments and things on the offer in the reply envelope with no postage on it. And the post office still delivered it.
Wow.
you know, because it had my name and address in both to and from. And so I wondered how many got lost in the mail. But, you know, I just went off of, like, your free information to give it a try. And then I believed in it so much after that, I bought your program. And I believe I've gotten a lot more accurate by, you know, watching all your DVDs and going through the details from there. So we'll see how this next mailing comes through.
Jill, this is another podcast guest that we probably should have paid.
I know.
We should pay. We should have paid him to be on the show. You can't rehearse this kind of stuff.
Well, I'm just, I'm skeptical. You know, you have a lot of good stuff to say, and so you know, I don't really want to pay for it right out of the bat. I want to test it first. It's cheaper to test it and believe in it more and then pay, and that's what I did. So
I love it. No, that's, you did everything right. It's perfect, and that's what I love about the ebook. That when we put that out initially, it was the number of emails that came back that said, uh-oh, this works. Now what do I do?
Yeah, you know? That's exactly what I'm hearing. So what do you remember the raw numbers, Luke? Like how many you sent out? What kind of responses you got? The percentages?
I sent out, you know, I was printing them off of my printer, which is really slow, and stuffing them myself. And so I could do about 100 a day, like doing the mail merge and putting it together. And I was also testing different counties. And so I did 100 a day, and I directed them at tax delinquent people and only. And I sent out over 400 of them. It wasn't exactly 100 a day, 120 or something. And I think I got more than 20 callers off of each one of those counties, some counties more. So I think it's very specific on which county I was doing it to. Like one particular county, I think I probably got 30 to maybe 40 callers from the 100 mailers.
So you got up 20% return, ballpark. Yeah. I mean, that is absolutely amazing.
I can't believe that many people read the mail. Right. I mean, I'm a internet guy. I like electronic signature and, you know, email and that kind of stuff, not sending stuff through the old fashioned mailbox. But people get stuff in the mail and they read it.
Yeah. It doesn't get lost in the sea of junk email.
No.
Man, that's great. You know, Jill and I have not done a tax specific mailer in quite some time. We kind of stick to the ones where, we stick to the ones that we talk about in our program, in our, education materials. And our percentage, our return percentages are a little bit lower, but boy, when they, Jill can convert them pretty well. So when they do come back, call back, she's, you know, it works pretty well. Works very well. We're closer to 5%.
It's probably easier to scale up the, you know, sending a mailer to everybody instead of just the tax delinquent people. Mm-hmm. You could do it on bigger size.
So did anybody sign the offer and just send it back?
No. No one signed and sent it back.
Not yet, though.
Not yet. Exactly.
Boy, that's great news.
Okay.
Yeah. So where do you want to go with all this?
I'd like to have the other problem. I got so many properties in my hand, I don't know how to sell them all. And that's where I want to go right now. But eventually, scaling that business up and see how big I can scale it up to. Have someone else answer the phone and close the deals, you know, automate the thing eventually. Just pick which markets I should be targeting, doing the strategic planning of this market, this size property, or this specific criteria that we want to make offers on to put the capital into right now.
Right.
Those kinds of decisions, but boil the business down to just that. But to be able to do that, I want to learn all the aspects of the business.
Sure.
And do all the jobs myself first.
How far are you in the education program, in our program?
I went through all your DVDs and I looked through most all the data, data discs, looking at forms and maps and everything.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. Like, what is the worst job you've ever had?
I'm from Northern Michigan. I think you guys.
Oh my gosh! It's Michigan Day.
Yeah, Michigan.
wait! But he's in California now. Everyone.
We have.
Yay!
This is the fourth show we've done today, and every single person on the show is from Michigan.
There you go.
So, where in Michigan are you from?
I summered and vacationed and everything close to Traverse City. In Northern Michigan, Northern Lower Michigan. It's a very vacation town, so for people that don't know it. And one of the things that tourists do when they go there is they buy fudge, Doug Murdoch's fudge. It's like the renowned fudge store. And so I got a job. It's probably my first job in one of his shops right on the side of town. And we used to make and sell fudge. And it was quite the mundane job talking to tourists all the time. But because it was right on the side of town, people would stop there and ask for directions. Probably more people asked for directions than stop there to buy fudge. And so we used to have fun with it, giving them all kinds of directions. I was the only guy working there. It was all good-looking younger girls. And they had set up these perfect, you know, like spreadsheets drawn up by hand of directions. How many lights here, right turns and left turns there to get to pretty much everything around the area. And so you could go by their directions. But who's going to do that, right, when you get asked like 100 times a day?
Mm-hmm.
And so the other tourist destination in northern Michigan that everyone's looking for is Mackinac Island. And how far to Mackinac Island and how do you get there? And there's a Mackinac Bridge. It's a big bridge that connects lower Michigan and northern Michigan. So we would tell them, go to the bridge and wait at the base of the bridge until the bridge turns over to the island. And then you can drive across the bridge to the island. And, you know, get more detailed in the story about it. But we used to do that like all day and not think anything of it. And people would never come back, you know, they can't find you again when they're lost. But there was a story that came up in the newspaper about people stopping by the bridge. And other people had heard this story. So some of the gas stations were telling the same story. And it became like a local joke about people that would stop at the bridge and wait for it to turn over to the island so they could get to the island. Yeah, so we used to have fun with it. But it was a completely boring, useless job.
Yeah.
I think the only thing I really learned was how to count back change.
I think, you know, when you're dealing with the public, like a customer service job like that in person, that ranks pretty high on my list of the worst jobs you can have, too.
Yeah.
Jill, you had a job like that, didn't you?
No, it's funny because I used to work when years ago at the Little Rocky Mountain Chocolate Factory in Laguna Beach. Similar kind of job, but we didn't give them. They have arrived. There was nowhere to go for directions. You know, right there at Main Beach, it was really fun, but we had a good time.
You know, my sister's lives in Traverse City. She's lived there since the early 90s. Mm-hmm. And she loves it. She wouldn't live anywhere else.
It's beautiful for 2, maybe 3 months a year.
Yeah.
The rest of the time is just Arctic.
Yeah, that's why we live here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what was your primary motivation to get involved with Land Academy?
It just resonates with me, the simplicity. I'm a landlord of properties, and you know, there's all kinds of problems and things over time. They pay great yields. Just rental properties that I have, but it's I buy the things with no insurance because I don't like to deal with the insurance.
Yeah.
You know, just insure them myself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to use the banks. I pay cash for them all, and you know, just try to cut out a lot of the middlemen as much as I can, and it just makes a much simpler business. And the land business is already set up that way. That's
right.
Normal. That's the way it's done. The bankers and a lot of the other middlemen don't even bother. They don't want to be involved in it. To me, that's great. And there's margins there because those people don't service and market that business. There's little competition. It's a contrarian play.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that so few lenders will lend on rural vacant property? And so, you know, you're exactly right, by the way. And that was one of the reasons that I chose this little niche in real estate a lot of years ago, because everybody doesn't, you know, there's so few people that get involved, and I still don't understand that. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think they can get over the concept of the land and pay rent. It's like, yeah. Wall Street doesn't like gold because gold doesn't pay interest.
That's right.
Or silver or other commodities, they don't pay interest. They don't want to be in that business.
That's
they want to be in the interest collecting business.
Great analogy, actually. You're right. Wall Street doesn't like precious metals.
No.
So what's been the best part of your experience so far?
seeing my phone blow up from making those offers. I think that's spectacular. It's I just have to make better offers, more targeted offers that are on properties that are more attainable for the prices I'm offering.
Yeah.
And close that gap. It turned down the pissed off callers and up the happy callers. And I think you've got an awesome business there. I mean, that's verification of what I'm looking for, an investment of time and money. So that makes it worth my time and money. How many people called me back?
I think it's great that you didn't spend a dollar on our program or any of the other stuff that we offer, and that you tested it yourself. It passed your tests. And then you said, all right, now I'll get serious about it. Make a commitment kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's excellent.
It's worth it.
Well, I appreciate too, Luke, that you didn't get turned off by, it was a little, there's a lot of tweaking that goes on, and you're reaching out in different counties and stuff. And I appreciate when these people called you back, you didn't go, all right, that's it, I'm out. I don't want to talk to people when they're unhappy. No, that's, I just got to tweak it a little bit. And oh, by the way, they're motivated or they wouldn't be calling me anyway. So there's some good there. So
yeah.
That's good.
Well, I used to be a penny stock broker for natural resource stocks, right? Like highly speculative natural resource stocks.
Wow.
And so I had a lot of clients. I advise them on what stocks to buy. And with the idea that some of them will make you a killing and most of them probably burn and die along the way. And wow. Every now and then guys get too many of the ones that, die along the way, and they get pissed off because they didn't get the one that made a discovery and pays out huge.
Mm-hmm.
When I have lots of clients and money that I'm doing this with myself, I see the big ones come through for some of the guys, and then some of the others, and then some of the others, and compounding money over time. Trying to explain that to the people that are pissed off about the ones that didn't work, it's I've got a background to that. I don't know if I can say it.
You have a background of getting heated phone calls from customers?
Yeah. Telling them how it's, how the business and the speculation that we got into still makes sense from this kind of math, and explain it to them and how people make money off of those odds. And it's not every single play. The losers are the learning curve, and the winners can be huge.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Boy, I'll tell you, you're bringing the right attitude to this.
Mm-hmm.
Some members get very, very discouraged with a couple of negative phone calls or, a 1 or 2% return on a mailer. But, if you keep plugging away, I'm sure you're going to, you'll do what the system is set out to yield.
Yeah, I can take a lower response rate because it'll probably be a lower number of pissed off callers because it'll be more targeted. It'll be closer to realistic. It'll be more people just putting the mail in their file and less people calling to chew me out.
I mean, that's the thing to remember too. I mean, and I'm sure you know this, almost every single one of those people are putting that letter or that offer in the file. You're going to get calls for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Some life event happens and they need money real quick. How are they going to get the money? Hey, this guy offered me money for my land. He said I can close quick. I'm giving him a call.
Right. It makes it a liquid asset to them. And they otherwise thought it was just, a regular piece of real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So once you reel in a couple of these, are you going to flip, or you want to flip or do terms, or you said you're a landlord, so you're all set up for collecting payments, I guess.
Yeah. I was just doing accounting on that before this call, like all morning long. I mean, I do that. I got the software and the system set up. I can just add on to that pretty easily. I'd like a combination of the two. I think you advise that in one of your DVDs, flipping some for cash and others for terms, and thinking about the property a bit. Like, do you want to get this one back again and again and again if you're selling it on terms? Mm-hmm. Or do you really want this one done and gone?
Mm-hmm.
And also your cash balance, you got to take into account your cash. I mean, you can't just put everything on terms. You run out of business. Or you slow down your acquisitions pretty quick as you're just collecting payments and using that to buy more.
Right.
So I think a balance of the two is the most sustainable, best path to growth. So I'd like to do that.
The best, the first thing that I look at when I make a cash versus terms decision, and it's always in the back of our heads, always, is access. So if you find a good access property that, and I mean, you can take a kind of a two-wheel drive, vehicle right up to it. Those are the terms properties that we keep usually. So that's about 2 to 1, Joe, don't you think? Maybe 3 to 1. 3 to 1, 3 cash, 1 terms.
Definitely.
Or some number like that.
It's like
Yeah, so you
that.
got the quick growth and the long-term cash flow.
Right.
Put them together and sounds perfect.
Yeah.
Or I'll just do a bunch of cash until I get to the point now where it's like it's got to be something really good, and I'll roll it into my terms, deals, and don't even think about them, So I wait for those awesome ones. Like, yep, we're gonna keep that one,
Yeah.
and so yeah.
Yeah, it kind of smacks you in your face, I think. It's like, oh man, that's, you do the review on it. You do the review on the properties that come back in the mail or on the phone to see if you want to buy them, and you know right there what you're going to do with
Bingo.
which one's going to be.
And you'll know who you're going to sell to. You have an idea all ahead of time how it's going to go.
Right.
It's true.
Luke, do you have any advice for new investors? I guess you're sort of a new investor, but it sounds to me like you've dipped your feet in this for a while now, or some version of it. So, do you have any advice for super new people?
That's always the question, right? I think the beauty is of this business is it's scalable. So you could start with small dollars or larger dollars, depending on what kind of size you want to take on. And so I'm very against using debt and leveraging. I think there's smarter ways to speculate on this kind of business. Speculate with 10 cents to make a dollar instead of speculating with a dollar to make 10 cents. I think if you think in those kinds of logical terms, you won't borrow money to start this kind of business. You could start small with cash that you have and make it a lot easier to take on this kind of speculation. For me, this is a speculation.
Right. That's great advice. I'm a huge believer in zero debt. I've said it for years and years and years. In fact, the whole company, these companies that we have, I closed a fairly large deal as a real estate broker and poured some of the money into it and started it. And I've never had to put any money into it since, debt or equity or otherwise. So I completely agree with that. I get the one of the questions that I get all the time from people, from new investors are, should I do this deal? I'm looking at this deal. I'm staring at it. I don't know if I should do it. Steve, what do you think? And my answer is, if you have to ask me that or think about, if it doesn't just hit you over the head that you need to do this deal fast, then you probably shouldn't be doing it. Or if you're going to borrow a ton of money to do it, that just scares me.
Exactly. You talk about options and or partnering up with you. I mean those kinds of ways of doing it instead of putting it on your credit card and making a mistake or something, throw it at
Yeah.
Steve and let him pay for
Jill's the option queen. She
it.
every property that we get that's over 5 acres, it's just in her blood to not write a check for it. And it's kind of in my blood too. It's $500 for 5 acres. Let's control the asset completely, spend the money, and then even if it sells not as fast as we think, there's a bunch of stuff we can do with it. Look, if we made a decision to buy it, if it passes our tests, it's we can pay the money for it. Her reaction is, let's string this out and see what happens. And it almost she's almost always right about that.
I'm like, let me sell it and then I'll buy it. It's
So,
way more fun.
on your list of inventory, like some of the properties say owner number and then a number. Are those properties that you've optioned? Like someone else owns it, or am I misunderstanding that
That's
term?
a great
No,
question.
that's a very good question. That's just the county. Some of the counties, they'll instead of putting an APN, they they, in their reference system, you're an owner number. So that's all it is. I'll have the APN in there and the owner number.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. Good question.
No, we don't differentiate on that. You know, I'll say this, that I don't think there's any option property on that list at all. That's all owned property. The option property, right. We make a decision to option a property because we know it's going to sell so quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, we wouldn't option a property and then take 90 days to sell it. Jill, or maybe you would you?
Option it and then sell it? No.
For like 90 days and just kind of see what happens. I think that we option property that we know we can sell in like a week.
It's right then and there. It's like, you know, I have a letter on my desk. It's so darn sweet I got physically in the mail and she from 2008 and it's a nice 10 acre. I'm already got on my head. I know what I'm going to do with it. I'm going to offer it to somebody else and just do the option deal. And sometimes it happens so darn fast. You know, I'm sending in two deeds to record at the same time. Do this one first and then this one.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, I think Taos County, New Mexico has that owner system. I would bet some money that that's what's on there.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
Mm-hmm. There's a few of them. And that's just, I put it in there. You know, that's a good question, Luke. I put it in there for potential buyers. So when they want to call the county and check the taxes or, I don't know, ask about building situation or whatever they want to do with it, they have all the resources there. So the county can go, well, the APN doesn't work for me. What's the owner number? And so they can do their own due diligence.
Gotcha.
So that's why I put in there.
A lot of years ago, I was at a tax sale there. This is many, many, many years ago. And I asked why they have that owner system like that. There's another county in New Mexico that does the same thing. And they said, and this is, you know, in the early days of computers, they couldn't take that relational database to mail out tax bills. So they had an owner number. So they knew if the owner had 25 properties in it, that they could just send one package out and pay the postage for one parcel instead of 25.
Gotcha.
That's the origination of that. It's that, silly now.
Mm-hmm. That leads me into another question. Mm-hmm. I guess about the depth of this market. Like, do you guys ever run into the same properties? You know, you see the same property come through your office over time?
Go ahead, Jill.
No, I don't. That's a really good question. Oh, goodness, no.
That was one of the concerns I had when I started. You know, are we going to run out of property? Am I going to eventually send every single property owner a letter? And man, it took
hilarious.
Me it's about 8 months. I probably never told you that, Jill.
No.
It took me about 8 months to figure out, it's just endless. And the real reason that it's endless, and I talk about this in the package, is because of the way the tax system is, the property tax system is set up in this country. You know, every year, sometimes twice a year, they get a little note in the mail, the landowner does, reminding them that they have to pay on a piece of property that they don't really care about anymore. Really, really works to our advantage as investors. Mm-hmm. So no, I hope that answers your question. No, we never see the same property coming back, or mm-hmm. it just seems endless.
Yeah. Good question.
I lost him. I think I did. I know. Hey, Luke, are you there?
Yeah, I think my connection dropped off for a second, but I hear you now.
Okay, good. Cool. Jill, you're here?
Yep. Okay. I'm here.
Yeah.
Good deal.
I was asking about that because I look at like maps of APN numbers and who the owners are and these different counties, and it's like a different person in each parcel. And it's just amazing how many people own this land. And it's not, yeah, there are some that it's the same guy owns pieces of land, but it's so among so many people, so many different owners,
right?
Mm-hmm.
That looks like an opportunity kind of approach to me.
Jill, do you still ask the question when people call in, landowners call in, do you ask them if they've received lots of offers from other people? Do you even get into that anymore? I used to do it all the time just for out of curiosity more than anything.
You know, I don't, but they do volunteer it to me. It's funny, like this guy had a guy that called me back this morning and we just renegotiated. He got another $50 out of me and I said, sure. It was kind of funny.
Julia,
I even made a joke.
You're slipping.
I said, well, you know, because I'm getting a couple acres for $600,
just joking.
Everyone.
Completely
so,
joking.
So, seriously, and he's like, could we do seven? And I said, I'll tell you what, I'll meet you in the middle. I'll give you $650. I'll still pay for everything. This is so funny. And I said, and this way, hey, I'm helping pay for you and your wife to go out and have a nice dinner. Part of it. Because so anyway. But no, but he did let me know the other day. The reason he was calling me back was because he had another guy that was interested. So, but, you know, I don't know if my head has gotten too big or what, but I really walk around with the assumption that I am the only one and you're going to want to sell to me. I'm going to make it so easy. What's left to talk about, you know, and it's worked great.
Every time I used to ask that question to a landowner, they would respond like this. Yeah, I got a letter from somebody or a postcard from somebody a couple years ago, but I never got one like the one you sent where it says we're going to close on Friday or whatever the date is. And this is the specific amount that we're willing to pay. And these are the steps to take. And I think that's what our process makes us stand out. Plus, I think, Jill, honestly, I think they remember you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think they remember the conversation with you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that really helps.
They do. Even today, I'll tell you, the guy who's just, he's sending me a physical death certificate with the situation. He went back to and I know this was a really nice thing. He went back to our old original letter and the address hasn't changed over the years. You know, I'm like, yep, same address, same phone number, same fax. He's like, oh, I'm like, yeah. So that's very helpful too.
Sure. So, Luke, do you have any inside track advice?
Inside track advice?
Yeah, it could be inside track advice for penny stocks even. I have a bunch of questions about that, actually.
Yeah. It's I've helped a lot of people through that. it's done well by me.
You know, somebody made a movie recently about penny stocks. Is all that stuff true? From the Wolf of Wall Street?
Wolf of Wall Street? There's a lot of slime balls out there in the stock industry. the firm I got in with is quite reputable. Eventually got bought out by a publicly traded brokerage house out of Canada. And, I mean, great guys. Just awesome people to learn from. The main guru there is Rick Rule and Eric Sprott. I don't know if you've ever heard of any of these guys. It's all about natural resource penny stocks.
Mm-hmm.
And the strategies that they use to buy these things are very value-oriented, the same kinds of ideas as going after land. They do it on mining operations or exploration operations. You know, they make offers. We'll give you money at these terms. Take it or leave it. No one else has the money to give you.
Right.
And, you know, we'll actually give you the money. The other guys say we'll shop around and try to raise the money. We'll give you the money. We have it right here, ready to go. And you know, it was just a much more stand-up outfit that had a lot of followers because of that. I mean, they didn't really do any marketing when I started there for years and years. It's just referrals. You know, make people money and they come back and they recommend you. And it's the best marketing you can have. And so that was a big piece of it. Other inside track, I mean, that might be the best inside track. Just take care of your customers. Like Jill is always saying, like you guys are always saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's I couldn't agree more.
Don't get negative reviews on eBay or Yelp or anywhere.
Right.
Take care of them.
Exactly.
Is there a resource
even if it costs more?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What's the one resource you couldn't succeed without? If there is one yet.
Yeah. I want to say the internet.
Well, that's a good one. That's basic. Ooh. It's one we overlook all the time. Yeah.
That's a good one.
That's the first thing that comes to mind. I'm a big proponent of the internet. Freedom of information.
Hey, if you had to start over, all over tomorrow, knowing what you know, what would you do differently?
You mean start your package or my life business or?
Both.
But both.
Or either.
I got into some extreme debt when I was in high school. Like before I went to college, I was about $250,000 in the hole. And I still had to pay for school. And my friends were looking at getting jobs, and I was saying, that's not going to work. I got bigger payments than a job can come up with. I've got to get more creative than that. And take some better speculations, some better businesses, better deals than what I'd been into. And I think if I could go back in time, I mean, I don't know if I would say don't take on any debt, but I sure wish I didn't take on as much as I did, because it took me a while to pay for it and climb out. But I learned a lot from that on living debt free from there and
Yay.
not doing those kinds of crazy speculations that I used to do, take them smarter approaches with capital that I can afford to lose. And then, I mean, career-wise, over time, the more studying and figuring I did, the less I wanted to be a slave to an employer, like a 9-to-5 job where I have to commute and trade my time for money. I want to trade my intellect for capital. And if I would have started out with that mindset, instead of what I was taught in school to go get a job and to show up on time and be there for these certain amount of hours, no matter how hard you work or how smart you work, you trade that time for some kind of paycheck, whether it's hourly or salary or whatever. I mean, that's enslavement. If I could go back and teach myself that in the past, I would have retired a lot younger. Now I spend a lot more time spearfishing with my friends out here in a lot of islands in offshore Southern California and at the beach, and taking my kids to all kinds of different places, different beaches, pools, hiking, events, parks. I mean, stacking the days thick with child events, right? That's what I love to do.
Hear,
And I
hear.
love to have that passion at the forefront of my time allocation instead of a job or career. I think there's a lot better ways to use your mind to create capital. So maybe it takes time and work in the beginning to set up that machine, but there's lots of those kinds of things you can do to make money without just giving your life away to a job.
Boy, this is a reoccurring theme. Jill, did you grow up this way? Is it a regional American thing? Because we're obviously both he and I, Luke and I, are from Michigan. And man, well said, Luke. Because I grew up the same way. You either worked for Ford General Motors or you really just aren't taking life seriously. And I wonder if that's still the sentiment out there. Or Jill, did you grow up that way in Southern California?
Well, you know what's funny? I think my dad broke the mold because my dad is from Grand Rapids, but he left at the age of 18 and went to Southern California and never looked back. And he always said his goal was to find a job where he made a lot of money and worked very little hours. And of course, he settled on a career of a longtime airline pilot and commercial and did what he set out to do. So that's what I grew up, seeing and knowing was possible, and all that. No, you didn't have to work for a factory or, you didn't have to do that. So, and also being out in California, there's a lot of different paths and very open to different things. So it's good.
The message I'm trying to send in all of our material is work pretty hard up front, get the systems in place, and then reap the rewards for the rest of your life. So yeah, you 10 to 15 hour days for the first couple of years probably aren't uncommon, but then you're set up. So man, I agree.
Love it.
Having a job is almost counterproductive when
Yep.
you really, really look at the whole picture.
It's enslavement.
In a word, that's what it is. Like, as a guest, you can say words like enslavement, but as a host, you can't say stuff like All right, last question. When will you know you're done with your career? Do you have like an exit strategy that you're following? Do you have a financial goal or a circumstance?
I'm kind of already done. I mean, I'm set for every, everything that I want. Now it's about my kids. And so this is all for my kids. These are deals that are going in my kids' accounts. And I've set up a couple of companies for my kids that are like investment companies to keep track of them and pay their, pay for their milestones in life, like education and maybe their first couple businesses they set up and fail and lose my money on,
Right.
instead of going into debt like I did.
They have to fail at something because they won't appreciate it otherwise.
Oh yeah. If I pay for them to start the business, they'll definitely lose the money. Just the way it is.
That's exactly.
Totally.
Hopefully I can finance their learning curve.
Hey, finally, do you have any burning questions for us?
I'm drawing a blank. I mean, I think you said 2 weeks. You put 2 weeks on your offers. You know, when people get the offers to call you back as a call to action. Is that with like testing different numbers over time or?
That was my way of saying, hey, you can have the cash now or not. I mean, it doesn't, no one takes it seriously. We get calls,
Yeah.
Jill, what are you doing deals from 2008, 2007 right now?
Exactly. They still come
So
back.
I don't think that I've never heard, well, actually a couple times I have heard had call people call like a week later and say, can we really still do this? I want to do it. So, the 2 week piece isn't over 1 week or 3 weeks. That was pretty, I guess it was an arbitrary choice on my point a lot of years ago. But, I think I think the whole point to that is give them a time period to work within. Don't just say it's an open-ended thing. The other thing too is that a time frame like that makes that offer void after that,
Yeah.
after it's expired, which from a legal standpoint is an attractive thing, I think.
It's easier to come back with a different number.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was $1,000 last week. Now it's 500.
How about the terms deals? Someone moves onto the property, I mean, and stops paying. Do you ever have to get into like evictions or foreclosure or anything? I mean, it's always been easy to work with them or?
I've never experienced anyone who, the vast majority, if not everyone, just disappears.
Yeah.
They, they don't, it's not, they don't fight us on it or ask for their money back or any, for whatever reason, they just kind of fade away. Jill, have you experienced any, you talk to the buyers all the
No,
time.
I was knocking on something at that moment too, 'cause no, I haven't. No, it doesn't happen. And I have one guy right now actually that he's had just this year, for some reason, he's got some money issues going on. So he gets behind, but then he catches up, and then he gets behind, and then he catches up. So, and it's a couple hundred dollars a month. And he's just so happy that I'm willing to work with him that everything's great.
Do you ever charge them the fees that we're supposed to charge? I hope not.
No, I
Good.
don't.
Good for you.
I don't. It's all good. So, and if anything crazy happened and we've accidentally bought properties before, not and that had structures on it that we didn't plan on being there. It's kind of like, oh, hey, it's a bonus. All right, fine.
Yeah.
That's great. So if someone walked away and left me a shed that they were working on, then okay, great. I'll take that.
I mean, the truth is, the margins on these properties are so high. I mean, if one person, hopefully there's not a lot of our customers are not, don't listen to this show. If somebody said, 5 years into a 10-year contract, hey, I live here, I don't have any more money, I would just say, that's thanks very much. Let's just call it even and let's rip up our contracts. Joe, wouldn't you do something like that?
Absolutely.
I just, we make our money back in probably what, on a lot of these deals in the first 2 or 3 months on a, and their payment streams of what, 10 years sometimes, 10 or 15 years on the larger 40-acre property. So yeah, it's
Super
real easy to be
flexible.
generous in this business.
It is, and it is, and I love it. Yeah. So.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Anything else, Luke?
That's it for now.
It's great to
Yeah.
have you on the show, man. I
Yeah,
really
thanks for setting this up.
appreciate,
Thank
yeah. Oh,
you.
no problem at all. If you have any questions, Check us out on successplant.com. It's all set up for our members to ask questions through that venue. And I hope to see your name on our 4 o'clock call today. Conference call with everybody.
Unless you're at the beach.
Yeah.
It's raining today.
I saw that.
It's all cloudy here too.
Coming our way.
One of the 14 rainy days a year.
That's send some our way, man.
Yay.
He's going to do just fine.
Oh, I have something funny to say about Luke. He doesn't know this yet. But when he said, you know, I'm kind of already done. I'm kind of already retired. I have a little note here because he was reaching out to me. What started this, he reached out to me the day asking for picking up a handful of properties to kind of get his feet wet a little bit and just wanted to buy like a bundle. I'm like, okay, sure. So I'm, you know, that it's the good thing. Never assume what someone can afford or not afford. So the properties I'm going to bundle up.
You're going to price gouge an already Academy member. Remember.
I was just thinking, all right, maybe, I'm trying to think, well, is the guy's budget $1,000, $2,000, $3,000? Oh, yeah, no, Luke's going to get a really nice offer of some really good properties now that I know what he can afford.
So, and that is why we're business partners, Jill.
So, yeah, I'm sure Luke will listen to that and laugh. That'll be really good.
You know, he said the same thing about sending his initial mailer out that one of our other members talked about last week was, you know, they had overwhelmingly positive return on the initial mailer that they sent. So they bought the package.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Great. It's what it's supposed to do.
I love it. It's like, well, like, you know what it is here? I was just reading about this based on our Conversion Fanatics guy that we interviewed the other day, which I love that guy. One of the things that Justin does, because they do stuff with all kinds of different businesses, but they set up test markets and they do test things. And I'm like, that wasn't the point. They for upping your numbers, a good way to up your numbers, say I sell, you know, whatever product, if you could have a test period of it or free trial period of it, that usually leads to conversion.
Sure.
So what's funny is for us, I never set out to do that, but
yeah,
a version of that is our ebook. If you get our ebook, which is free, then you go out there and you, I'm in a free trial period. Try these concepts.
Mm-hmm.
People like Luke just did. Then, oh, by the way, it works. Okay, trial period's over. Now I know it works.
Right.
I'm in. You know, I'm in.
So mm-hmm.
We kind of accidentally did our own version of that.
Yeah, we did.
Perfect. So it's perfect. So cool.
Yeah, he's going to be fine. He's got the right attitude. And, you know, I think he's kind of got out that mechanical process driven, you know, the process driven mind toward 100 mailers a day, 120 mailers a day kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. You know what I appreciate too about our members is they all have the right. I have yet to meet a member that does not have the right attitude who's scrambling to do this for a reason.
Yeah, me too. You're right.
They've all really thought about this and they're really, you know, prepared and planned and they're taking a step back and doing this the right way. They're not quitting their jobs. They're not, you know, buying vacation properties, you know, on the side or whatever, buying that Ferrari, and they're really doing this the right way. And it's
right.
Yay. That's what you should be doing. So all that stuff will come.
Of all the things I worry about in life, I'm not worried about Luke.
Nope. You too can have an almost vintage Porsche.
How's your car?
Do it right. Oh, well, let's see. There's a couple lights on, but other than that, it's normal because it is an almost. So
is it? Are the lights in German?
No, the lights aren't in German. It's funny you say that. So yeah, that's good. Everybody who drives my cargo gets confused because the key goes on the left, not the right.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a little hard to get, have to think about it when they start the car. It's good.
Ooh. All right, Jill, let's go buy some property.
We hold a drawing to win a free property every month. Enter to win by reviewing this show on iTunes and downloading our free ebook at landacademy.com.
If you want to get involved or you need more information about our profitable, niche real estate operation, call 480 267-0359. You just might get Jill at the other end of the line.
LandAcademy.com. You are not alone in your real estate ambition.